We're dancing in the discomfort zone, and I gotta tell you, we are dancing in a real discomfort zone here as we talk to Christian Schaff, founder of Uncharted Supply Company. I met Christian on a morale-building tour in Iraq, my first one. It wasn't his first, but it wasn't his 39th either. He's done a lot of them, and that was just the beginning of an incredible life of achievement and of being a humble hunter of discomfort. Christian Schaff is the real deal, not afraid to get uncomfortable in order to move his life forward. So I brought him on to talk about all of that and give us some insights on how we can be stronger. So without any further ado, here is Christian Schaff on Dancing in the Discomfort Zone podcast. Thanks for joining us. All right, we are dancing in the discomfort zone today with Christian Schaff of Uncharted Supply Company. Christian, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Ann. How are you?
Good. Nothing like having to go into your truck so you can get some privacy for recording a podcast.
We have a very open office environment, and I just feel like people probably get sick of me talking a lot, so I thought this would be nicer for everyone.
You've got a private office right in your truck. And now you're in Salt Lake? No.
Park City, close.
Oh, Park City.
Just up in the mountains.
That's awesome. And you and I met on a morale building tour in Iraq, which is pretty cool. Let's just start there because you want to talk about getting uncomfortable. Let's go into a war zone and play music. How did you end up getting into that?
Yeah, that's wild. How many years ago is that? I mean, it's got to be
07 or 08.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the long and short of it was I was playing in a band, and we did well. We never took a record deal. It just felt like a slavery contract. And so, you know, we just kind of were like a small business and doing well in the Midwest. We were playing at South by Southwest, doing a showcase, and some dudes with high and tight haircuts came up to us after a show and asked if we'd like to play for the troops. And then, fast forward a few years, that turned into 39 trips I took to Iraq. My band played over 150 shows. We were named Armed Forces Entertainer of the Year, but probably more importantly, we figured out how to get bands into all the little bases around Iraq and Kuwait and the surrounding countries. And so we would do things like we'd send the Pussycat Dolls over, or the Spin Doctors, or Hoobastank. And we did a thing called Bikes Over Baghdad. We'd build skate parks and take all the X Games BMX guys. And then we'd do, we do like running tours, which is what you were on. So we had Bart Yasso and Frank Shorter and you, and, we'd do 5Ks kind of anywhere. I mean, I think, music's great. But we were always like, what else is there? Like, music's fun, but it'd be fun to have a little competition or a BMX show or whatever. And so yeah, it was kind of a wild chapter in my life, that's for sure.
Well, and it's interesting because the whole point of that was to make the uncomfortable experience of the troops a little less uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. I mean, probably my favorite thing I would hear, and we'd hear it frequently, was that a troop would come up and say, man, for the last 2 hours, I forgot that I was in Iraq. And boy, it's been a long time now. I remember studies around, from the Pentagon and the guys who were running these programs talking about statistically, how many times a troop would come and talk to a therapist or something when there was entertainment versus when there wasn't entertainment. Like just getting something once a week for a couple hours was a dramatic increase in the well-being and the morale. I'm not a therapist or psychologist, but I saw it firsthand. I believe it. I could see people's faces change. I could see them relax. And I'm sure that it was really valuable for people that really needed it. So yeah, that's what we did. That was our mission for about
Cool. And you went on 39 of those trips.
Yeah, 39, which felt a little Russian roulette-y a couple times. some trips it would just be boring and hot. We do our shows, nothing would happen. And then other trips, I mean, it felt like you were in a minefield. It's like every time you turned around, some siren was going off, or, some mortar round was coming in. And I'm very thankful for that experience. I'm very thankful that I'm here to talk about it today.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I only went on three of them, but I remember one base, and I don't remember whether it was our trip or a different trip, but they had a very extensive orientation when you got there? Like, if you hear this sound, do this. If you had to hear this sound, do this. And I'm sure, yeah, you were going, I was in the rear operating bases. You were up front sometimes.
Yeah, our whole thing when we started was we were a band, and they were mostly bringing bands over, and there was 350 bases at the time, and only like 30 or 40 were getting entertainment, because only 30 or 40 had runways. And the bands had just, they were renting this old gear from this place in Kuwait that was huge. It was like Motley Crue style speakers, you know, just these huge speakers. And of course, it, you know, you couldn't convoy, it was too dangerous. Convoy meaning drive. So you had to take these C-130s or C-17s, these, you know, these planes. And what we did is we figured out how to like kind of hot rod everything and make it smaller and more powerful and fit it all into a Blackhawk, which allowed us to hit all these joint operating or forward operating bases and joint security stations. And I mean, sometimes you'd play in front of 1,000 people, and sometimes it was 7 in a tent and your head's touching the top of the tent. And it just didn't matter. You know, we would just show up wherever they want us to. And we figured the smaller the crowd, the more they needed it. And we just doubled down.
You know? Yeah, that's what I was about to say. And the more discomfort to get there, but the more payoff for everybody.
Oh gosh. Some of those bases are college campuses. You know, there's swimming pools and there's Baskin Robbins and there's Wi-Fi and there's a library and all that. And then you get to another base and like literally their food got dropped off every third day in some thermoses. And it would just be like pancakes that were cooked 3 days ago. I mean, it was totally roll of the dice, I think, for where a lot of these guys ended up. But you can imagine the difference in your day-to-day life having one situation or another.
Yeah. Well, and it's such a strong service orientation to be able to put yourself in that kind of discomfort. What lessons did you learn from coming away from that?
Oh gosh. Lessons.
For you and who you are now.
You know, I think habits really create a person. And if I look at who I was on that first trip versus who I am now, you know, we told people after we did this a bunch and started sending other people, just get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's an easy concept to like hear and go, yeah, I got it. But to be forced to practice that every day, I find in day-to-day life now, whether it's, you know, with my business, we face some kind of obstacle that seems insurmountable, or it's I'm out on a run and I'm out of water and there's 4 miles to go and I miscalculated or whatever. Things seem so much more manageable and just doable after I've been through so much uncomfortable, you know? So I always tell people like, man, I hate being comfortable because I feel like I'm not growing and not learning. I have this, I always call it my TED talk, but it's like, man, if you've got a comfort zone, let's just, you know, if I had a piece of paper and I drew a 6-inch line and I was like, this is your comfort zone. And at 8 inches is running a mile or speaking in front of a board of directors, like think how many things you can't do in life because it's outside your comfort zone. But if you're constantly living at that end of that 6 inches, 6.5, 6.25, and you're growing that comfort zone, it just starts opening your world up, whether it's chasing elk up a steeper mountain or it's getting in front of more people. You know, since I've gone to Iraq with you, you know, I've been on Shark Tank and we used to play shows in front of 100,000 people. And I do all these things that I just seem really manageable to me. And I think it's because I had so much experience in places where you just train yourself to be like, okay, I got this one step at a time, you know?
So I'm going to take a leap that starting your business was uncomfortable, but not too much of a stretch. Is that fair?
Boy, you know, starting a business, that's not scary. What's scary is when I got to a point where I had to basically put my entire life savings behind this idea to order inventory. So I had worked, you know, at that point, 30 some years, and I'd built up a pretty nice nest egg. And I was way ahead of where most people are at 30, right? And I had this idea. And I remember the day, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, am I going to write this almost $500,000 check to buy wet wipes and paracord and knives and goggles and having no idea whether I would be able to get that money back at any point? that was one of the more uncomfortable days of my life, but I knew that if I didn't do it, I would regret it, which is, I think, kind of another lesson, right? Mm. Like they always say, like, people's number one regret on a deathbed is the things they didn't do, not the things they did do. So you kind of go, well, if I start over, is that the worst thing that could happen? You know, but maybe working for these jerks over here and not really seeing what I'm capable of would be, even though it's more comfortable. So, that to me was probably one of the more uncomfortable moments in this entire process for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, more at stake there. So tell us about your business. Tell us about Uncharted Supply Company and why you decided to start it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I grew up on a farm in Wisconsin. I did all the outdoors things, whether it was skiing or hunting or biking. And, you know, as we said, I've been to Iraq 39 times. I wound up in Southern California, working at a company that had a really nice white corner office, getting paid very well to do marketing for a tech company, and didn't really like it. And just felt very unfulfilling. I mean, when you're literally putting your life on the line every day to put smiles on people's faces, there's this kind of like, it's like the Blues Brothers, like we're on a mission from God, you know, it's like, there's just this like compelling feeling that what you're doing is really meaningful and making a difference. And I almost did a complete opposite by going to this job. And I didn't like the situation, the people, the whole thing. It just felt very, very like nerfed up, you know, everything was safe and expected. And I was going, you know what I mean? Like just
yeah, totally padded.
Padded. And I just, I was going skiing one day. I was driving out to Colorado to meet some buddies and it snowed like 2 inches in the mountains behind Orange County. And to this point, you know, I'm living in Orange County. People are like, man, what about earthquakes? And, you know, that's always the thing you think about being a non-California native. And I'd thought about that a little, but hadn't really thought about it. And then, you know, I'm in my F-150 and I'm sitting in 2 inches of snow. And like literally for 8 hours, I was stuck because people couldn't drive in 2 inches of snow. And I was so confused what type of a human this was, because where I grew up, you know, you pray for these snowfalls. And if it snowed 2 inches, it didn't snow, you know, like there wasn't a second of delay in school or work or anything. You just, let's go. It didn't snow, you know, nothing. So it really was a shock to me, given the way I'd grown up and how I was watching all these people react to this. And it just made me realize, you know, thinking about this in the weeks after that, wow, like people really don't have the same experiences I've had. Like, it's not that people are dumb or whatever. It's just that you grow up in a community where everything's in your iPhone. Everything's on demand. Everything's safe. Everything's easy. You don't have to learn those skills. You know, you focus your time elsewhere. But at the same time, and this was, you know, 7-8 years ago, I had this big belief that our world was going to start dramatically changing. I was just looking at all the statistics around people flooding to large population centers and natural resources and weather patterns and even political stuff going on. And I was like, man, I don't know what's going to happen, but I will bet my life savings that something's going to happen. And
literally
the system. Yeah. And the systems people depend on are going to fail at some level. And so that led me down a path of, well, what's the solution? Like, is it training? Is it a product? Is it this, that? And I decided that most people won't pay for training. They just don't. They want to throw money at things to make problems go away, which isn't actually the right answer, I should say. In an emergency situation, you should be trained. You should practice. But my belief was, on a macro level, most people wouldn't. So if we could create a product that people could actually use, like I always said, if somebody's never been outside before and something happened, I could hand them a product and they would improve their situation. That was the goal. And so I designed this 72-hour emergency kit with a bunch of my friends who are Everest guides and pilots and doctors and all these guys, and put it on Indiegogo as a crowdfunding thing, and it set a bunch of records. And, you know, next thing I know, I'm on Shark Tank and we got investors, and fast forward about 5.5 years later, and here we are talking to you, and the business is growing. So that's kind of it. That's where we are. We build, you know, we've historically focused on all sorts of products designed to get you through unforeseen obstacles. I mean, we have battery jump starters and pack rafts and first aid kits and survival kits. We've recently kind of added another layer of this, and that's kind of prepared adventure. So mm-hmm. I always say, like, get all the way out there and all the way home. There's a lot of people getting into the outdoors these days. There's a lot of people that want those GoPro pictures and don't have the training or the know-how to get there. So Nobody, you know, a lot of people
get home, as you say.
We're to get home, right? So a lot of people sell, you know, Gore-Tex jackets and skis and boots and bikes, but I didn't really feel like there was a strong brand around educating and guiding and assisting people when they really needed some help to make sure they got home safely. And that's what we focus on a lot.
Nice. And you put yourself in a lot of those sort of backwoods hunting situations, as I've seen some of your elk hunting videos so talk to me a little bit about that discomfort and putting yourself in the way of that, essentially putting yourself behind your product, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, for sure. But also I think it's just, I don't want to say that danger is a drug, but I think when you've spent so many years in your life going to Iraq or operating at a farm, like I remember when I was living in California, I just had this desire to do something that felt dangerous. And I mean, the closest thing I could do was like put on a spandex bike kit and ride my road bike through Malibu as hard as I could, you know? I was like, wow, I fully understand now why like Tough Mudder is a thing. Like people just want to feel dirty. They just want to like have something that makes them feel, because we live in such a sterile world. And, you know, I don't know, I guess for me, living in LA and Orange County for a handful of years made me realize like how important that was to me personally and how important I think it is to everybody. So man, I'm in the woods and in nature as much as possible. I will also say that necessity is the mother of all invention. I don't think you can build emergency products in an office. I think you have to get out there and know what it feels like to have frozen fingers and frozen feet and to be tired and see what actually works, you know, because some things can work in concept, but when you actually get out there and test them, there's a whole different set of circumstances you need to take into consideration. So yeah, I put myself out there, one, because I love it, but two, gosh, like if I'm going to sell you a product that I say is going to save your life, I better be pretty damn sure. And this is my way of making sure. So, you know, I'll have a plane drop me off in the Brooks Range for a week in Alaska and we'll hunt grizzly bears, or, you know, I'll go out on a mountain bike ride with a bunch of my buddies who have Olympic gold medals and just try to hang on as long as I can. And I it doesn't matter. Like I'm always learning something by getting my butt kicked, but yeah. I'm proud of that. And I think it's a good way to be.
That's awesome. Well, and like you said, and another recent guest, Phil Dunlap, talked about this in some of the MMA fighting he did in Thailand, where once you've faced stuff like that, starting a business, going on Shark Tank, talking to the board of directors is not that big a deal. You know, I mean, you start to gain a little perspective and you realize what you can do.
People always, you know, when on Shark Tank, people go, "Are you scared?" And my favorite response was, "Well, they're not real sharks." You know, like it's just a bunch of people in chairs. Like what, there's nothing really to be scared of. I mean, they're going to try to intimidate you, but if you just realize that like, it's a TV show and they're going to try to do that, and it's your goal to like do that back to them, it's fun. You know, it just changes everything. But I don't think you get there on day one. I think that's a buildup. I mean, I was a musician for 10 years. We, you know, I sang the national anthem one time at a NASCAR race. There's 176,000 people live on ESPN and there's fireworks shooting off 5 feet behind me. And I tell you what, Shark Tank was very calm compared to that, you know? So it's, you got to walk before you run. Whether it's actually walking and running, or it's a business, or it's anything, everybody wants a shortcut. Everybody wants a life hack. And I really believe that the most authentic and right way to do anything is just to put in the time and the process and learn the intricacies around whatever it is you're passionate about to get to the right answer.
Yeah. So what is next? How are you, you know, once you've pushed to a certain degree beyond your comfort zone, you know, What's the next thing that would take you to that next level of growth?
I mean, I think my hands are full, so
I'm good for now.
Yeah, I mean, building a business is hard. Building a business in a pandemic, in a recession, with crazy inflation. I mean, I'm getting enough stressors every day that
I'm growing. Leave me alone, lady.
Yeah, like our business is growing despite all that, and I'm really proud of that. But that's a lot of challenge for me on a daily basis from a mental capacity. You know, from a physical capacity, you know, I have a PR team here at Uncharted, and they always want to present me as an expert, and I hate that, because man, even when I was a musician for 10 years. And like one of my buddies is Phil Solom, and Phil wrote, "I'll Be There for You," the Friends theme. He was in the Rembrandts, right? Like he literally like one of my best friends, and we shared a practice space with Soul Asylum. Like both of these guys have been on the cover of Rolling Stone. Both of these guys have platinum records. Like I'm not a musician, they're musicians, even though that's what I did for 10 years. Yeah. So I just think anytime somebody's like, yeah, I'm an expert in this, it makes me immediately like not want to believe them unless they are really the pinnacle of it. So for me, it's I don't even want to say it's about being humble, because I'm not even sitting here saying be humble. I constantly feel like I'm at a deficit for what I should know and the position I'm in. So again, whether it's doing something new on a mountain bike, or trying to hunt a different animal or a different area, or understanding the entomology behind fly fishing and the bugs, like there's so much to learn always. There's no way one person can just be an expert in it all. So I'm just constantly trying to find new challenges. I recently, 2 weeks ago, I went spear fishing for the first time. And I mean, I have a really high VO2 max. I run with a weight vest through the mountains every day. I'm like, yeah, I can hold my breath, no problem. I mean, it's the guys I was with, they would go down and sit on the bottom for 2 minutes, 30 feet down. And I'm down about 25 feet. I look around and I'm going straight back up as fast as I can, you know? But man, that fired something up in me. And I was like, I mean, I was successful. I shot a couple like 50, 60 pound fish. And now I find myself like searching the hashtag spearfishing on Instagram at night before I go to bed, because it's like, wow, I could get better at this. I could get better at water and at oceans and understanding. I mean, it's endless, right? Yeah. So I don't know. It's never ending. My biggest fear is running out of time, to be honest.
Well, and I feel like part of the discomfort of knowing that you have things to learn is also, especially in what you're doing, the humble approach that keeps you saying, there's some things I don't know. I'm going to make sure that I'm doing my research, that I'm backing myself up, that I'm taking some other people or whatever it is.
Yeah, I'm always amazed by, whether you call it a competitive brand or personality or somebody else in the space who has a very, very firm opinion on who you should be and what you should do. Everybody's different. Everybody's starting at a different point. Everybody has different strengths and weaknesses. And to me, it's more of a conversation than a lecture with anybody. And so yeah, I the more experience you gather, you know, they always say it's like big fish, small pond, right? Like when you're in high school, you think you know everything. And then you get...
Didn't we? I thought we did. I did.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. But I the more I know, the more I realize I don't know shit, you know? So I don't know. It's a journey, not a destination for me. Yeah. And every day I get up and I'm pretty thankful that this is my life, and I'm scared, and I know that there are people counting on me and people that have invested money in me, and we have a big mission. And my goal is to make the world a safer place for people. My goal is to help people explore the world and see the things that I love and get them started, but to do it in a way that's safe. And then when big things happen, they can go, wow, our dad's here tonight because he had a product you made. And that's, you know, yeah. there's a lot of work to do there.
Means something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about the discomfort of leading a team in your own company. Because leadership is, you know, a lot of the people that are listening to this podcast lead teams, whether they own the company or they work for the company or whatever. Talk to me a little bit about the discomfort you've experienced in getting the other people along with you to help you march towards that mission.
I've learned so much. Like right now in my morning runs, I'm listening to a book from Jocko Willink on extreme ownership, you know, and leadership. And I'm always listening to different people's perspectives and grabbing what I can that I think is applicable. I would say I've been an average leader for a long time when I thought I was a good leader. Again, I think it's like the more you know, the more you realize you don't know anything. I don't know. I think it takes a lot of, this is where like the humbling and the ego checks come in, when you look in the mirror and be like, am I leading in the right way? And am I doing this right? And everybody's going to make mistakes and everybody's going to fail. I think historically, like where I've made mistakes is I trusted people too much. And what that means is like, I'd have a buddy that needed a job, and I didn't look at the red flags as to why I didn't have a job. And I'd give him a job, and he's my buddy. I'm going to trust him, right? And then I find that he, you know, he was our customer service guy and didn't answer 4,000 emails and took our phone number off the website so people didn't have to call. And now I don't have a friend because I expected something out of him that I shouldn't have. And to me, that's leadership. You don't put a person in a position that they're not going to do, right? Mm-hmm. So, right. I mean, right now we're hiring for a content position, and we've got four guys going through two or three tests to find the right guy. And I think the way they respond to the emails, how fast they came to get the gear that they're going to shoot, how fast they turn products in, like all these little things are helping inform me so I have a better starting point with somebody. You know, there's just little things like that, little lessons you learn as you go through this. Communication. I'm not a micro manager. I like to check in with everybody, make sure everybody's good and trust that everybody's going to do things. But I've realized that, man, there's a lot of different types of employees or coworkers or partners, and they all require something different. So I have to get outside of what works for me and figure out what works for different groups of people and make sure they're getting what they need, because the best thing I can do is be a force multiplier, right? The best thing I can do is make sure everybody around me is operating at 100%. Not that I'm operating at 100% and they're all at 70, because that's not getting as much output. So I don't know. I could talk about this forever. We could drink a lot of beer on this subject, but I'm still a work in progress for sure. And, you know, I think it's a really hard thing in life. I mean, I guess there are some natural born leaders, but I would bet even they would admit they've learned a ton through a ton of failures at, you know, being in those positions.
The challenge with any discomfort is unknowns. And the biggest challenge with human interaction is you have no idea what the other person's going to do.
Right.
You know,
or what their night was like the night before, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody's got their own book they're writing, and you just, man, you can have the most consistent person on earth and something hits them the night before and everything changes, you know, or people can be dishonest with you about who they are at first impression. It just, that is hard. People, I always tell people I'd rather build a small special forces team than an army. You know, mm-hmm. I do not want to be in the business of HR. I want to get this thing to a reasonable size with a group of people I love working with. And then either we sell it and we move on to something else. But I am terrified of trying to manage 200 employees or 500 employees. I think that's a whole different skill set that, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I don't have.
Yeah. At least you don't right now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Well, and it's so interesting. I mean, coming from Under Armour, where we were 80 when I started, and when I left, there were 1500 worldwide. Now God only knows how many there are, but like, it was a completely different experience as an employee. And so, yeah, it's a really interesting challenge as you think about growing your business.
Yeah. It's a very important and very challenging part for sure.
Yeah. So aside from getting better at spearfishing, of course, what is the next fun outdoor athletic challenge that you've thought about undertaking?
Well, so I've been injured for like 2 years. I had the worst case of tennis elbow to the point where it fractured the ulna in my arm. And for about a year, I couldn't even squeeze toothpaste out of a tube with my dominant hand. Like, that's a weak. If anybody's had tennis elbow or any kind of tendonitis, they understand it's not like a pain you can work through. It's like a pain that makes you drop whatever you're holding. It's just insane. And that has affected so much of what I could do. I mean, even just making a fist jog was hurting. And I've gotten more out of shape than I've ever wanted to be. You might look at me and be like, oh, you look fine, but you know when you feel it, right? Mm-hmm. You know when you're in beast mode and you know when you're not. So about a month and a half ago, I kind of was like, I got stem cells. It fixed it mostly, like I'm 90% healed. And then I like rolled my ankle and I was hung up for a while. I mean, I finally got kind of healthy like a month and a half ago where I'm feeling strong. So honestly, right now I'm just about like getting rid of about 10 to 15 pounds and like getting my shoulders back and getting to that place where you feel like you can go do the things you used to. Mm-hmm. I mean, I used to go, I don't know if this is me reading into things too much or not, but you know, like I said, I go mountain biking with my Olympic buddies and running with them. And I gotta admit, I think I've gotten a few less calls than in the last few years because I've been slow. I mean, but it's totally right. I gained 20 pounds and I couldn't lift and they're waiting for me. So I want to get back to that place where at least get back to zero. That's step one. You know, I've really, really gotten into archery hunting specifically, but hunting. I think there's so much survival in hunting when you're going out and living out of your backpack in the most remote places on earth. And so I'm working really hard at becoming more and more self-sufficient with that. It's a very steep learning curve. And, you know, I'm getting to a place now where I do feel really comfortable. I'm not saying I'm like the best hunter in the world, but I'm competent in my skills and confident, but I want to get better there. And then I've got some friends that are getting into it that I want to pull them along too. I think teaching also teaches you something. So, you know, that's kind of the short term for me. It's just, building the business, fighting through all this craziness going on in the world, you know, getting my life back in shape. I'm 41. I'm going to be 42 on Friday, like 42 and single. And at some point I would love to have a family. So, you know, hopefully we get a little reprieve in kind of the workload here and I can maybe focus on some things like that. And that's kind of it. That's kind of what I'm doing.
Awesome. And adding a whole another level of discomfort with all the romance stuff. So
massive discomfort.
Good and uncomfortable. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Well, it's been awesome chatting with you. Thank you so much for sharing all of your views on dancing in the discomfort zone. I always like to dance with people who are comfortable with it.
And I got to say, like, the reason we connected, for those listening, though, no, I always listen to books on tape or podcasts when I was running, and I was listening to the new Cam Haynes book, and he gave you a shout out in that book about, what was it? Relentless Forward Progress.
I think, page 161, I guess.
Oh, you found it.
Of course, I'm three quarters of the way through it now.
I literally stopped running and like hit the 15 second back a couple of times. I'm like, no way, that's so cool. So,
and I didn't know where it was too. And so I'm reading along and he's like, well, he mentioned, I bet it's nothing. And then I put it in. He's like, yeah, I did what Ambani said. I was like, what?
Well, it was funny because he was talking about his first marathon, I think, wasn't he?
No, first 100 miler.
First 100, okay. Oh, well, then that maybe story isn't good, but you ran my first marathon with me.
That's too. Right.
Because we were in Iraq doing these 5Ks. Yeah, we're doing these 5Ks in Iraq. And you and Bar Yasso and Rob were all going to the San Francisco Marathon. And
I wasn't going yet.
Oh, you weren't going. They were going. And I think, you know, you're on these 2-week things with these people and you just, it's like you're like a band of brothers. You can't just go do something without me now. Like I got to go too. And I remember Bar Yasso was a famous running coach. It's like, have you ever run a marathon? I'm like, no. He's like, how far, what's the farthest you've run? I'm like, I don't know, 5 miles. He's like, you can't do this. I'm like, I'll see you there. And then you jumped in. You're like, well, you're not going without me. So, I think that night I went to some like little gym on the base and I ran 10 miles for the first time in my life. And I was super sore. And then
that was the day we worked out with the Marines too. You remember that? We went in and did that workout with them.
Yep. And I remember then I ran 10 miles and then we got on a plane to fly home and, you know, my legs and hips totally locked up because it's like 2 15-hour flights. And I just run double the farthest I've ever run in my life. I go home for like, I don't know, half a day and fly to San Francisco. It's like, let's go run a marathon.
You did it too.
I made it. I don't think I set any land speed records, but I do remember. I remember a lot of moments from that. Remember the just walk a minute, run a mile kind of thing.
Yeah, we were doing a little interval.
Yeah. And then I remember passing a girl that had crapped her pants. And I remember thinking, like, what's the decision making process? Because if you're gonna win, if there's money in the line, I get it. But I mean we were running like a, I don't know, 4.5-5 hour. I mean, nothing fast. And I just remember thinking, well, at least that's not me, you know. Yeah. We're gonna make it without any discoloration. So
I remember when I was coaching, and one of my runners said, "So what do I do if I have to go to the bathroom?" I'm like, "You find a porta potty. If you're winning, you can poop your pants. Otherwise, not my runners."
Yeah, I don't quite understand that one, but I was thinking about those people years later. I'm like, I wonder what the end game is there, you know. But no, that was a very fun, special day. I always remember. So thanks for pulling me along that day. And you ran it like it was no big deal. I remember you were just like, Oh yeah, I'll run a marathon. Sure, let's go.
I was doing anything. A whole bunch a year at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I ended up running, I think, 4 or 5. I started doing Ironmans, you know, and my signature move was not training, just signing up the night before for all these things.
Oh, the night before.
I remember I did the LA Marathon the night before. The New York City Marathon, I was dressed as Popeye drinking beers. I'd gone out to New York to give a talk, and I was with some people that were there for the marathon, the Oakley and Asics guys, and I was like, man, I'd love to run this. It's a lottery. And I remember Greg Welsh saying, well, I have a bib if you want it. And I grabbed I left the bar, dressed as Popeye, grabbed a Chipotle burrito, got up the next morning, and I ran super fast. I was in good shape, and I think I was like pretty carb loaded from all the beer. But yeah, that way there's kind of low expectations. You know, I wasn't training. I can just go do it.
Exactly. Oh, I love it. Well, again, thank you for sharing your insights and discomfort with us here, and wish you all the best with Uncharted. I'll put the website on the show notes. So if anybody wants to go check out the company and check out Christian's social media, you'll get some really cool pictures of the nature and his awesome dog.
And my dog. Yeah. Yeah. He's my better half, I guess.
And there he is, Christian Schaaf, founder, CEO, and president of Uncharted Supply Company. He is the real deal when it comes to getting uncomfortable, seeking discomfort, and becoming a better, more humble person as a result. But somebody who can really put his money where his mouth is and literally has in order to make this world and make all of us safer in it. So thank you so much, Christian, for your friendship, for your companionship, for your awesome insights, and again, for trying to make the world a better place. We could all learn a little bit from it. What is that thing that you need to seek out that might be a little uncomfortable, but could make your life even stronger? Go hunt it, subscribe now, and I'll see you next week, y'all.